Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Samach Zayin. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a specially marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins on the first wide line of daf Samach Zayin. You will notice immediately as you look at the daf markings, the bow tie shape. This is a marking scheme that we started in our previous shiur. You noticed on Daf Samach Vov Amud Aleph, under our Mivneh heading, all of the necessary explanation. So we continue then with the issues of Shinui, and later you'll see Yeush discussed once again. Omar Rav Chisda, Omar Rav Yonason. By the way, note that we have a Roman numeral number 1, and a few lines later there's an Ika Diamri, and we can highlight the two versions immediately just by focusing on the markings. The bow tie that you see in under Roman numeral number 1 speaks of Shinui Shehu Kaine, that Shinui is a means of acquisition where there's a change in the item, so the thief keeps the item and returns the money value of that which he stole. The second version, you notice where your Roman numeral number 2 is, Iko Diamri, and at that point we've dashed underlined She'enoi Kine, that the change in the item is not grounds for acquisition. Now, that having been said, we continue with Rav Yonason, and he is asking, Minayin Lishinui Shukone, what is the source for teaching that the change in the item is reason for the gazelin, the thief, to keep the item? And as we said, his responsibility is simply to offer a financial restitution. Shenemar Veheshiv Esagzela. The Torah, in describing the obligation of a thief, it says he shall return the item that's stolen. Ma Talmud Lomar Asher Gozal. What do I benefit by having the Torah add the words Asher Gozal? The Torah, as I'm sure everyone knows, is quite frugal with its words, and I dare say even letters. If the pasuk says you return the item you stole, you don't have to repeat that you stole. So the Gemara explains, what does the Torah intend? Im ka'ein shegozal yachsir. If the item that was stolen is in its original state, as it was when the theft took place, so then you return the item, the im lav. If not, it's undergone change. Domim be'arlo bori shlumi. Then money alone, or mere money, is what the thief has to return. In other words, the item itself is something that the thief can hold on to. The Gemara asks, "Hi, Asher Gozal," but the expression that you're basing this on, namely that Shinui Kaina, Shinui is a means of acquisition, that expression Asher Gozal mi boya is needed for something else. Limute Gezel Oviv, to the exclusion of a case where a man's father committed a theft. She'enoi moisiv chaimish al gezel oviv. If his father had stolen and sworn falsely, which would obligate the offender himself to add a fifth to the principal when paying back. Not so when it's a son of the thief whose father had sworn falsely. So how do I know that the son of the thief, though he has to return, he has to make the restitution, but does not add the fifth? Where do we learn that from? We learn that from Asher Gozal. So it's Asher Gozal is not available to teach me this idea that Shinui Kaine. The Gemara answers in Cain, if the point of the pasuk was simply to memayit, to exclude the addition of the fifth one, you're dealing with gezel aviv, the father scenario, nichtoiv rachmona veheishiv es gezelo. The Torah would have said that he who committed the theft has to return. And we would understand that in that context, when the thief himself is returning, he adds a fifth, not when the son is returning. Asher goza lomali lemichtav. Why does the Torah have to add those two words? It would have been sufficient for the pasuk, as we just said, to say v'heishiv es gzeilo. So once again, the asher gozal expression is truly extra. Shma min otarti, from the fact that the Torah opted not to say gezeilo, and rather to say asher gozal, we have the right to derive 2 points. One, shinui kaina, and two, to the exclusion of the case of gezel oviv. V'ika diamri. Now, a second version. Omar Rav Chista, Omar of Yonison. Minayin l'shinui she'enoi kaina. Just the opposite of what we said before. From where do we know that shinui is not a means of acquisition? That even though the item underwent change, you have to return the item itself. No acquisition on the part of the thief. Shinamar, the pasuk says, v'heishiv es hagzela mikomakom. You shall return the stolen item, however it is, even if it underwent change. The Gemara asks, v'hoksiv asher gozal. But do we not have extra words in the pasuk to suggest otherwise? The Gemara says, hahu miboyalei hagzela yishaloi moisiv chaymish v'ein moisiv chaymish al gezel aviv. As far as asher gozal, it has a role. It teaches me that only when one is the thief himself who swore falsely will he add a fifth. Not so when it's an heir, a son, returning the theft committed by his father, even if his father happened to have sworn falsely. According to the second version, this Iko Diamri, there is no focus placed on the alternative eskezelo, v'heishiv eskezelo, that we mentioned in the first version. Omar Ula, minayin liyeush she'enoi kaine. Here we go to the other topic that we had discussed in our previous shiur. From where do we know that yeush, where the owner resolves or resigns himself to the loss, he gives up hope of getting his item back, that is not a license for acquisition on the part of the thief. Though the owner gave up hope, the thief does not acquire thereby. From where do we know that? You'll notice we have a number 1. On the second line from the top of Omid Beis, you'll see a number 2. So we say Shinemar, as it says in the following verse, Veivesem gozel es hapiseach es hachila. This is a posuk found in Sefer Malachi that refers to the bringing of sacrifices from that which is stolen or that which is lame or ailing, sickly. Gozel dumio de piseach. We compare gozel to piseach. They're both taught in the same verse. Ma piseach de lesle takanta klal. Just like lameness in an animal has no solution, once an animal is lame, the lameness of an animal is something that doesn't get better. You can't fix it. So we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Af gozel de les le takanto. So too, when dealing with an item that is stolen, an animal that is stolen, lo, there's no hope. It doesn't become yours. Lo shnal lefnei yeush velo shnal leachar yeush. No distinction whether it's in your possession before the owner gave up hope, when it certainly is not yours, and even after the owner gave up hope. The post compares the situation of gezel, of theft, to lameness. Rava Amar Mehocha. From here, Rava learns the halacha that yeush is not kaina. The posuk says in Vayikra Perek Aleph Posuk Gimel, where the Torah speaks about a person bringing one's sacrifice, it says korbonoi, his sacrifice, his velo hagozel. Korbono indicates something you own, not something that is stolen. So if someone, let us say, stole a chulin animal and a mundane, a common animal, and then attempted to sanctify it, it does not take hold. Amos. You'll notice we have a double underline marking. This highlights simply the stages of analysis. When the Amos means when at what stage are we speaking when we exclude that which is stolen, that you need a verse to tell me that it's unacceptable. Ilemo lifnei yeush, if the owner of the animal hasn't given up hope on it, pshita lama likra, it's obvious that it's not yours. What do I need a pasuk to reveal the obvious? Elo lav liachar yeush. Rather, the pasuk is telling me that even after the owner gave up hope on seeing his animal returned, you, the thief, cannot bring it as a sacrifice. Ushma mino yeush lo koni shma mino. And we see from here that yeush, the resignation of the owner, is not a means of acquisition on the part of the thief. The Gemara asks, "Vaha Rava Hu the Omar the Gozal Korban de Chavrei." If you take advantage of the little arrow, the squiggled arrow, with an indicator to go back to Samach Vov Amid Beis, namely in our previous shiur, Rava made the point that the Pasuk Korbono, the very Pasuk that we're darshaning, that we're explaining right now, he said that the Torah excludes as a legitimate sacrifice only a case where a person stole an already sanctified animal, an animal that had been sanctified by the owner, and the thief stole it, I repeat, after it was already sanctified, that is not a legitimate sacrifice. However, if the thief had stolen a chulin, a common animal, and then sanctified it, that would have been an effective sacrifice. So we would have said then, from Rava's comment back on Daf Samach Vav Amid Beis, that Shinui is Kaine. So we're asking here, that I can explain, a correction, that Yeush is Kaine. So here, when the Gemara asks, V'ha Rava Hu Di Omar, is it not so that Rava said back there, on Daf Samach Vav Amid Beis, the Gozal Korban de Chavrei, that in explaining Korbono, he took it to exclude the case of stealing an already sanctified animal. That's why the korban is no good. That's why the thief can't bring the sacrifice. However, if he stole a chulin animal and then sanctified it, it would have been effective. So we have a contradiction then in Rava. The Gemara answers, E boy esema hodarbe. One approach is that he retracted, Hodar, he turned away, he retracted from that teaching, so that there's no inconsistency. Once you retract from the original teaching, so you're left with only this approach. V'boyesema, another approach to resolve these two is Chad Minayu, one of these two teachings, Rav Popa Omra. So that it's not an issue now anymore of a contradiction within Rava. One statement would have been made by Rav Papa, and the other made by Rava. So that if you set up the Gemaras like that, it would then appear that one is taking the position that Yeush is Kaine, that would be the one who darshan Korbanova lo Korban de Chavrei, and the other is taking the position that Yeush is not Kaine, namely even if you stole a chulin animal and tried to then sanctify it, it would not be effective. That would indicate that Yeush is not Kaine. We continue now with a quote from the Mishnah, Umidas Tashlumei Arbo V'Chamisha. With the opening Mishnah of our Perek said that the nature of the kefil payment is more far-reaching or broader has broader application than the payment of 4 or 5, in the sense that kefel, we said, applies to all stolen items, and the 4 or 5 payment eino noheges elo b'shor v'se bilvad. You can see we've written in the continuation of the Mishnah between the lines that the 4 or 5 payment is applicable only in the case of the theft of an ox or a sheep. V'amai, why do you say that the 4 or 5 payment is limited to the theft of an ox or a sheep? And if someone stole someone's chicken and slaughtered it, there would be no 4 or 5 payment. So the Gemara answers, Nelaf Shor Shor Mishabbos. I should not say, correction. Why do you say it's limited when you can learn from through a Gezerah Shabbat, through a word comparison to Shabbos, that it should be inclusive of all animals? And the word comparison is by using the word Shor that we have in our Pasuk Shmois, Perichof Alav Pasuk Lamed Zayin, and the word Shor that you find in the context of Shabbos in the Torah. Ma lahalon chayov oiv kayotze, and just like in the case of Shabbos, we treat all animals, even undomesticated animals and birds, like the Shor that is featured in the Torah by Shabbos. Afkan, so too here by 4 or 5 chaya v'oiv kayotze bohen, and as we said, the result of that would be that the 4 or 5 payment would not be limited to merely a shor and seh. The Gemara answers, Omar Rava, Omar Kro. The pasuk says, shor v'seh, shor v'seh shnei pa'amim. Let us look together. We have a little star indicating to draw your attention to the margin where we have the pasuk written out. Shmois perichof alav pasuk lamas. And let's read the pasuk together. It says, ki yignov, the pasuk of course is in the context of theft. That's our topic. Ki yignov ish shor oy seh utvochoy oy mechoroi chamisha boko yishalim tachas ashor varbo tzoin tachas haseh. If you notice how we've underlined the key words, shor and seh, they're underlined as they appear twice in the verse. That is what Rava is saying here in the Gemara, that shor v'seh appear twice, and the repetition is shor v'seh in midiach rina lo. It's to hammer home the point that it only by shor v'seh do you have that 4 or 5 payment that the pasuk refers to in the event that the thief either slaughters it or sells it, but 4 or 5 does not apply to other creatures. We've mentioned already in the past numerous times that the 4 times payment is in the case of the sheep theft, and the 5 time payment is in the case of the shor, the ox theft. At this point, the Gemara acknowledges that there is a repetition in the pasuk. However, the Gemara wants to know exactly which words are extra. Don't forget that when a pasuk is revealing a new point of law, there's a basic amount of information that needs to be written simply to communicate the new law that's being taught. So I have to have a reference to shor and seh. But the question now is, which words shor and seh are viewed as extra? I'm sure everyone would say by first glance, well, of course, the second time they appear in the pasuk, namely at the end of the pasuk, the second reference to shor and seh are the extra words. But as we go through the Gemara, we're going to demonstrate that that's not the case. Now, if you allow your eye to skim ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice there's a lot of marking, a lot of triangle use over here. Before we get into the Gemara itself, I just hope that it's clear what we are looking for. We're looking for which shor and seh are considered extra. When we say extra, it means that I could have communicated the idea of 4 or 5 by just writing shor and seh once. The extra words are just that, and they're here to tell me that the 4 or 5 payment in fact is limited to shor and seh. So which words are extra? What are we to say about all the triangles? So we look at the side of the Gemara under our Nosei / Mivneh heading. The Nosei is the topic heading and the Mivneh, the structural note that we combine into one. The triangle with the colored in tip we call Hatsa'os. Hatsa'os are suggestions. The double underline highlights the expression D'nichtoiv Rachmona. Let the Torah write. So what are we doing with these triangles in the meantime? These are nisyonos, attempts, laharos, yitur shor v'sibeposuk, to show which words are extra, which shor and set words are extra. Shemelame, that will ultimately teach us the tashlum dalet v'hei noye grak b'shor v'seh bilvad, to tell us that the 4-5 payment is unique, is limited to the case involving the theft of an ox or a sheep. Now we added in our note, v'lo loimdim mishabes tishor dichtiv hasam kolel kol habehemos vayfas, and we're not going to learn from Shabbos where the word shor that is written in fact includes all animals and birds. Let us do a little marking exercise. I recommend doing this as much as possible, even if in our recordings we don't do it. Try to do this on your own. Just looking at the markings, try to get a feeling of what the Gemara's approach is going to be. So at this point, I want to skim over the Gemara by focusing on the triangles with the colored in tip and focusing on the double underline. The question right now is which two words, shor and seh, which two shor and seh words are the extra ones? So triangle one says, e lemo shor v'seh de seifo miaser. If you think that the second appearance of those words is the extra, and then the nichtav rachmona, the Torah will then, that is the Gemara will then spell out what the pasuk may have said or could have said. You notice inverted triangles. The inverted triangle represents rejections. So you'll see immediately there's a rejection of that suggestion. Skipping to the next colored in tip, the number two, shor v'sed d'resha miyusar. Maybe the first two are really the extra words. Let the Torah have written, and you see the nichtav rachmona. The Gemara will then spell out what the Torah might have said. And then that too will be rejected. In these rejections, the Gemara will explain that the suggestion is simply not acceptable, because if I would have followed that suggestion, I would have come to an erroneous conclusion. We have a flurry of upright triangles as well. You see that there's a give and take discussion. Where the point of the regular triangle is pointing upwards, we've indicated those are tshuvos kedei lechazek hatzos. These are responses in order to invigorate or strengthen the most recent suggestion. So when we get into suggestion two, true, there's an initial rejection, but there's an attempt to resuscitate to show how I would not have been misled. And there's a back and forth, as you can see, until you get to triangle number three, where the colored in tip is numbered three. At that point, the Gemara says, Ella, do you see where we're reading? Ella, number three, shor de seifo v'seh de resha miaser. The shor at the end of the pasuk and the seh at the beginning of the pasuk, those are actually unnecessary for teaching me the basic law of four or five. In other words, without writing shor at the end and seh at the beginning, I would have understood that the four payment is associated with the sheep, and the five payment is associated with the ox. The Torah could have written the pasuk without the shor of the seifa and the seh of the resha. Why did it write those words? To tell me that the 4-5 payment applies to shor and seh alone. It's unique to those creatures and not to anything else, not to any other animal that's stolen and then sold or slaughtered. Okay, I hope that we've given you a fair overview of what to expect. And now, let us turn to the Gemara text. We asked on the second to last narrow line of the Gemara, Hey Miaser, which words are the extra ones? And by the way, keep one finger on the pasuk that we have in the margin. If you'll say that it's the shor and seh that appear at the end of the pasuk that are extra, the nichtoiv rachmona, the Torah could have written, ki yignov shor oi seh, utvachoi umechoroi. Now, we've dashed, underlined, shor and seh. Those are the words that we're going to keep in the pasuk. The shor and seh at the beginning. And the pasuk is telling us so far, when a thief steals an ox or a sheep, utvachoi umechoroi, and either slaughters it or sells it, chamisha bokar yeshalem tachtov ve'arba tzoyin tachtov. Here we're using pronouns and not writing shor v'seh. So would that not have been able to communicate the basic law that 4 and 5 are paid in the case of a shor v'seh? The Gemara says no, that would have messed things up. E kosav rachmona hachi, had the Torah written like we just suggested, hava amina, I would have thought, boy shlumi tish'o l'chol echad ve'echad. I would have thought that you would have to pay 9 times the value of the shor or seh in the case of slaughtering or selling. You might try to say, but hoksiv tachtov tachtov chad denichtoy chad tachtov miaser. You might have tried to, let's say, resurrect our suggestion by saying, I wouldn't have been misled. The pasuk, the way we read it, according to the suggestion, was had in it at the end the word tachtov twice. And one of those tachtovs is extra. It's miyasir, it's extra to tell me, l'chalek, tell me, no, not 4 plus 5, but 4 for one and 5 for the other. The Gemara says, no, ahu, the tachtov words, miboyalei l'drosha achrino, they're needed for something else, for another drosha, another scriptural exposition. It's not available to tell me individualization, namely l'chalik. The sanya, what do I learn from the words tachas in the pasuk? Yochol the sanya, yochol gonav shorshav emona. Imagine a person stole an ox worth a mona. A mona is an amount of money, $100, just for example, illustration purposes. Could you imagine, would you think that a person who stole an expensive animal worth a mona, yeshalem tachtov negidim, that he can repay by offering the owner an animal near death? Negidim means an animal in the throes of death. Talmud lomar, tachtov, tachtov. The words of the pasuk tachtov, tachtov, or as we have it, tachas, tachas in the pasuk, tell me that you've got to repay something of equal value. You can't just try to pan off on the owner an animal that's about to die. In the case that the stolen animal was a healthy, robust creature. So at this point, the suggestion that shor v'seh of the sefer are extra is unacceptable. Why? Because by not having written them, I would have thought that 4 or 5 mentioned in the pasuk really is 4 plus 5, and you'd have to pay 9 for the theft and slaughter of either a shor or seh, and that of course is totally untrue. Hello? So we move on. Shor v'seh de reisha miyusar. Maybe the shor and seh of the beginning of the pasuk are extra. De nichtev rachmona. Let the Torah have written, if all the point of the Torah was to tell me that for the theft and slaughter of a sheep or ox results in the 4 or 5 payment, let the Torah have written as follows: Ki yignoiv ish utvachai umachoroi, chamisha bokor yishalem tachas hashor, ve'arba tzoin tachas haseh. Would that not have been sufficient for teaching me the four payment and the 5 payment for the shor and seh? And one says, no. E kosav rachmona hachi, had the Torah written like we just suggested, havi amina ad degoniv trei v'tovach lehu. I would have thought that one is not obligated in the multiple payments until he actually steals 2 of shor and seh and slaughters the 2. The Gemara responds to, as we said before, to resurrect the suggestion by saying, I wouldn't have thought that. Utvachoiksiv. Lecha tvacho is in the singular, namely slaughtering 1. So the Gemara says, that still wouldn't help. The Amor, I still, if you would have left out the shor and seh of the resha, granted, the word tvacho appears in the singular, I still would have thought, v'yema ad degonev travayu masvin lehu, that the offense envisioned by the Torah that would result in the 4 or 5 payment would be only if you stole 2 animals and sold them. The Gemara says, that's not true, I wouldn't have thought that. U'mechoro iksiv l'chad. The word mechoro is what is written, In accordance with our suggestion, we're maintaining the word mechora, which is in the singular. So I wouldn't have thought that the offense that would result in multiple payments is only if you sell both of them. The Gemara rejects that. V'emo, have amino, had we stuck to the suggested reading, namely keeping out of the pasuk shor and seh of the resha, I would have thought, ad the gonev trei, the tovach chad, umazvin chad, that the offense that results in multiple payments happens only if you steal 2 animals. You would have had to steal 2, and then slaughter 1 of them, and sold the other. Therefore, I need the shor v'seh of the resha to tell me that even if it's 1 that you stole, you would be chayev. The Gemara says back, no, I wouldn't have been misled. Oy mechoroi ksiv. Rashi on this says, o mechoroi ksiv, demashma oy tevicha, oy mechira. Taha ksiv oy lechalek. The posuk, even if we maintained our suggestion, I wouldn't have been misled into thinking that the offense happens only if you were to slaughter 1 and sell the other. The word oy is a lechalik, as we saw in Rashi, means separates. That the offense is achieved with the result in 4 or 5, even if you do only 1 of the subsequent actions, slaughtering or selling. The Gemara says, no, but still there's a weakness in the suggestion. V'akati havamina, I still would have thought incorrectly, ad degonev travayhu, that the multiple payment will not be realized until he would have stolen 2 animals, v'tovach chad u'meshayer chad, oi, mazvin chad u'meshayer chad. If the offense that results in 4 or 5 would have entailed the stealing of 2 animals, and then what do you do after that? What would have been done? Okay, there, either slaughtering 1 of them and leaving the other, or selling 1 of them and leaving the other. But still, we know that's not true. The offense doesn't entail an initial stealing of 2 animals. Rashi elaborates to appreciate what the misleading interpretation would have been. Looking at Rashi, six lines from the end of the Rashi commentary, you see we have a double star. The emo ad de goniv tarti de kidichti b'seifa. The pasuk says at the end, tachas ashor, tachas aseh. That is what we would have been maintaining according to last suggestion, the last double underline we saw above. I would have been maintaining the expressions tachas hashor and tachas haseh, leading me to think that you would have had to have stolen two of them. Therefore, I need to have shor oseh of the resha, where the pasuk said ki ignoiv ish shor oiseh. The initial theft involved one or the other being stolen, not two. So we can't say that shor and seh of the resha are extra. Elo shor the seif of a seh the resha miaser. Rather, the word shor in the end and the word seh at the beginning, those are actually extra. The nichtei brachmona, the Torah could have written Ki yignov ish shor utvachayu mecharoi chamisha bokor yishalein tachtov v'arbatzoin tachas haseh. If the pasuk would have written that, I wouldn't have been misled. I would have realized that the initial theft involves one or the other, not two. And as far as the actions done afterwards, either slaughtering or selling of the creature that you stole would have resulted in the 4 or 5 payment. Therefore, shor de seifa v'seh de resha lomali. Why do these words in fact appear in the text itself, in the chumash itself? Shma mina shor v'sein midyachrino lo, to convey the teaching that the 4 or 5 payment is unique to shor and seh, but not to anything else. We continue in the Gemara with a quote from the Mishnah: Ein ha-goynev achar ha-ganov mishalim tashlumi kefel. If a thief stole from a thief, the second thief does not pay kefel. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, and we have a firebox that appears around Rav. Shitas Rav. We are reading our note on the side under the Nosei, the topic heading, Rav's opinion. Ha dikotoni de ganav minaganov. That which the Mishnah teaches, that the second thief, he stole from a ganov, eino mishalim, the second thief does not pay kefel, the ganov rishon, to the first ganov, to the first thief. That idea, hainu kolzman shelo nisyashu abaylim, that is true as long as the original owner has not given hope on seeing his item back and having his item returned. Aval im nisyashu abaylim, if the original owner has given up hope, ganav rishon kanoi, the second thief has acquired the item, the stolen item. We mentioned before, I know that sometimes we sound repetitious, but it's easy to make a mistake. When we speak about the thief acquiring the item, it doesn't mean he's off the hook. It means that he has to pay. He can fulfill his atonement or his penitence through a cash payment. He has now the right to keep the item itself. And therefore, we speak in terms of the item itself as being acquired by the first thief. So he's now the legitimate owner of it. V'ganav sheni yechayev kefel l'ganav rishon. And then, if the second thief steals the item concerning which the original owner has given up hope on, and steals the item from the first thief, that second thief has to pay kefel. He has to pay twice the value to the first thief. We've added here, bekitzur, in a concise fashion, or as we say, briefly stated, Rav soiver de yeush kaina. Rav is of the opinion that yeush, the owner's resignation to loss is a means of acquisition. The topic, as we've indicated in our previous shiurim, is a topic that we've been discussing for a while already, the issue of yeush. We've also discussed the issue of shinui, different means of acquisition in the context of theft. Now the Gemara. Omar Rav, loy shanu, he qualifies the Mishnah. The Mishnah taught that the second thief is exempt from paying kefel, so that is taught, lo shanu elo, it's not taught other than lifnei yeush, other than under circumstances where the original owner has not been misyayish, he hasn't given up hope. Aval achar yeush, after the original owner has given up hope on having his item returned, kanoi ganav rishon, the first thief is said to acquire it. That's the item itself now becomes his. The thief's obligation is simply of a cash restitution to the victim, but the item itself is acquired by the first thief. The ganav sheni mishalim tashlumi kefil ganav rishon, and the second ganav, the second thief, the one who stole from the thief, has to pay kefil to the first thief, who is really now the owner. What do we see from here? We see that Rav is of the opinion that Yeush is a means of acquisition. Omar Rav Sheshis. Rav Sheshis raises an objection. And the language that introduces Rav Sheshis' objection is something we actually saw back on the Samach Hei as well, the same expression. Rav Sheshis says, Amino, I figure, Kinayim v'shochiv Rav, Omar lo shmaitza, that Rav said what he just taught while he was dozing off. Namely, it's not accurate. And he couldn't have said such a thing unless he was dozing off and wasn't concentrating on that which he said. Disanyo. Now, you'll notice we have a new marking. We have a house shape. And this is explained on the side under our mivneh as kushyos al Rav. These are questions or challenges to Rav. And if you allow your eyes to skim ahead to the Samaches, as it appears now, we're going to be spilling over our strict Daf Yomi quota, and we're going to, in order to complete this whole line of thinking, we'll have to learn a considerable way down Samaches Omed Aleph in order to complete the sukya. Do you notice there are three of these house markings that appear along the way? There's a numbering scheme going down the side of the Gemara. They represent challenges to Rav. We're going to be raising objections along the way from Tanaic sources. So now let's continue in the Gemara. Why does Rav Sheshis feel that what Rav said is inaccurate? To Sanya, we have the following Tanaic source, Omar Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva raises the general question of why does the Torah impose the multiple payments of four or five upon a thief that slaughtered or sold the animal that he had stolen. So Rabbi Akiva answers, "Mnation ishtarish b'chet." The word nishtaresh has, and here we're going to use a word that is a pun that's fully intended. Because the root of this word, now why do I say pun fully intended? Because the word, the root of the word, in fact, is the word root. Shoresh, nishtaresh, is a verb form whose root is shoresh. The pasuk, or I should say the Torah is saying, you know, you this kind of thief, that not only did he steal something, he stole it and he sold it, he has to pay so many times more because his action, his sin, took root. What do you mean by that? What does that mean when you say his sin took root? So the initial thinking is that the item that he stole and subsequently sold is a sale that is a full-fledged sale. The expression you can see in Rashi is shekano yumahanu maisav, that the thief acquires it, and being that he's considered the owner of it, the sale that he then commits, as the pasuk said, umicharo, he then sold it. It's a legitimate sale. Why is it a legitimate sale? Because he wasn't selling the Brooklyn Bridge. He was selling something that he owned. Well, where along the way did the thief gain ownership? Amos, when did the sale take place that you can describe it as an actual sale, a sale that's legally recognized? If you're to think that the sale took place before the original owner, the victim, ever gave up hope, we continue at the top of Daf Samaches. Mi Ika Nishtaresh. Would Rabbi Akiva have described that as Nishtaresh? Now, we explained before that the sin has taken root, and that implied that the sin of theft took root in a sale that he subsequently did as a bona fide sale. Yeah, but if it's before Yeush, before the original owner gives up hope on getting his item back, no one would say that such a sale is legitimate. That would be an example of, now Rashi uses an expression we haven't really seen in the past in the Gemara, but the term is Shinui Rishus. A Shinui is a term we've experienced quite a bit in the past. Shinui means a change. The different kinds of changes, as we've alluded to already along the way. One of the changes has to do with Shinui Rishus, a change of domain. Rishus meaning ownership or domain. The change of domain without the original owner giving up hope is meaningless. So Rabbi Akiva's description of the sale as being nishtaresh b'chet, elo the acher yeush, rather you have to say it's after the original owner gave up hope. Oh, once the original owner gives up hope, then we're able to say that the thief acquires it. And when it gets to the buyer, when it gets to the lokeach, the purchaser, we have the two necessary elements. We have Yeush plus Shinui Rishus. The Gemara continues, V'i Salka Daitoch Yeush Koni. If you were to think like Rav suggested, that Yeush is a means of acquisition, In this case, the thief acquired it through the yeush of the owner. And when we speak of acquisition, that would mean then that the thief is the legitimate owner of the item. Amai mishalim tashlumei arba v'chamisha. Why, logically, would the thief have to pay four or five times the value? Shelohu tover, shelohu mocher. Well, if he acquired it, he's then slaughtering or selling his own item. Since when do we impose penalties on people that sell things that are theirs or slaughter their own animals? So what must be? What must be is then, unlike Rav, that the thief is not said to acquire it through Yeush. Oh, it's not his, and then he goes slaughtering someone else's animals, so the Torah penalizes him. So at this point, we've come to the end of our question on Rav. You see from here that it must be that Yeush is not Kaina. The Gemara answers, Amri, response to defend Rav, Kid'omar Rava. As Rava says later on, Rava appears, we have a little star we put to the side of the Gemara. You'll notice the source where Rava is found is five lines from the bottom of the Gemara. But as Rava says later on, Shona means repeat. The main explanation, though, is not, you don't see it in the words of the Gemara, but when you look at Rashi, you discover Shishona Bechet. Let's look at Rashi together. Rashi on the third narrow line, Shoshana Bechet, Le'olam Lifnei Yeush. The source where Rabbi Akiva appeared that said his sin took root is not like we thought, that taking root means that the thief's actions are binding. And that, no, not so. The owner has not given up hope. And Rashi points out, even though the thief's actions, the sale is not a legitimate sale. Nevertheless, the Torah is upset with him to the extent that he has to pay four or five times because Shoshana Bechet. He's repeated sinful behavior. Not only did he steal the item, he then had the audacity to sell it to someone else or to slaughter it. That's why he has to pay four or five. Not because he did an action that takes root in the sense of being a binding sale. Not so. Why? Because the Rebbe Akiva source was talking about a situation prior to Yeush. Rav was describing a situation after Yeush. Toshma. Another objection is raised. The Pasuk says, Utvachoi oi mechoroi. It's a quote from the Pasuk. Ma tevicha sheina chayzer. It's just like slaughtering is, we call the point of no return. The animal is dead. It doesn't come back to life. Af mechira sheina chayzer. So too the sale described in the Pasuk. It sounds like we're talking about there's not going to be any obligation for the sale violation or for having committed the sale unless it's a total sale, where the buyer from the thief truly acquires it. Amos, at what point would you describe it as being a total sale? Sale of Eino Choseres, that doesn't return. Ilem Olifnei Yeush, if it's before the original owner gave up hope, am I Eino Choseres? Why would you describe that as not returnable? Rashi repeats what he mentioned earlier. All you have then is Shinui Rishus. You have a transfer of domain without Yeush. No one says that just by shifting the location of the item into someone else's domain that's acquisition. So that wouldn't be described as a sale that's final. Amol Niachar Yeush. Rather, it must be a case where the original owner gave up hope. If you're going to think like Rav said, that the ganav, the thief, acquires with simple yeush, amai mishalim dalet vehe, the same argument we saw before. Why would the Torah impose 4 or 5 on a sale like that, of a sale of an item that you acquired? Shalohu tovech, shalohu mocher. In such a case, it would be that the thief is slaughtering or selling his own item. Why would a person be penalized for that? Gemara says, "Kidomar Rav Nachman." Once again, like we said before, this source is describing a case before Yeush, and the understanding is in conjunction or along the lines of Rav Nachman, who appears later. We've noted that you see Rav Nachman appears two lines from the bottom, but the Gemara is citing Rav Nachman here, as Rav Nachman says, "Prat." The Torah mentions that the thief is chayev if he conducts a sale. A sale doesn't mean here a legitimate sale, but it looks like a sale as opposed to a rental. The thief is chayev when he steals it and then sells it. A full sale, an unqualified sale, without any time restrictions in the sale. To the exclusion of a case where a thief, let us say the thief stole an item, and then said, I'm selling it to you for 30 days, which we would call a rental. So that's prat. Prat means the Torah excludes from the 4-5 penalty. So we'll apply Rav Nachman, who appears later, we'll apply that idea over here. The sale that the Torah does not hold the thief responsible for is where the thief conducted a sale of 30 days. However, if the thief, and I emphasize here, before Yeush, the thief conducted what appears to be a non-time-bound sale. I'm hesitating using the words full sale, because that could mislead you into think it's illegally full sale. No, I mean by that an unrestricted time-wise sale. Then the thief will be chayav 4 or 5 times, even though it's not a sale that really works legally. Why? Because it's before Yeush. However, had the thief committed the sale after the original owner gave up, oh, there'd be no 4 or 5 payment. Plus, the thief is then selling something that has become is. Like Rav said, no objection to Rav yet. Meisvei. Here we go with a third attempt to question Rav. First of all, notice we have a long marking. That means that all of this is quite a bit of text is presented to develop the question. So before we go into the text, there's actually quite a bit to say about this Gemara textually. The opening Tanaic source, you'll notice, has 3 parts to it. The circled numbers are very important. Section 1, then there's section 2, and section 3. After we read the initial source, the Gemara, in its characteristic style, when it has a long source, it excerpts from it the section that presents the main, in this case, the main problem. And that, you could see, after the initial frame, you see the Gemara says, Katoni mia metziosa. Metziosa means middle. Middle would mean, and when you have 1, 2, and 3, the middle is quite obviously section 2. So the Gemara quotes section 2 of the source, and the Gemara will ask the questions that we've been seeing in the past, Amos, when? And you'll see that we have a diamond marking on the side of the Gemara under the Mivneh heading. The diamond represents Nisyonis Lahamid Abraisa, Gonav Uboacher, section 2 of the source where it speaks about a thief who stole and sold an item, and then someone came along and then stole from the purchaser. These diamonds represent an attempt to set up the source, Bukimta Achid, to set up the whole source, the middle part, we'll eventually talk about the Reisha and the Seifa under one circumstance. Lifnei Oliachar Yeush. So as we go through the Gemara, we start with a question that we indicate on the first wide line with the house marking, Meisvei. Let's get into the source. As I said, there's an amazing amount of detail here, and hopefully by taking advantage of the Gemara with our markings and the write-ins between the lines and time to time alluding to Rashi will gain clarity. The Gemara, Meisvei. We're asking on Rav, who said that Yeush is Kine. The source says, I also must mention at the outset, this source is going to undergo many attempts and changes in explanation. So there isn't too much value to committing ourselves to an initial clear understanding of the source. After all, it's going to go through a number of changes later. So we'll give some superficial translation as we go along, but we're certainly not committing ourselves to any of it. The source says, Gonav ubo achir v'gonvo. Someone stole, and someone then came. A second thief came along and stole from him. Harishon mishalim teshlume kefel. The first thief pays the double. Vasheni eino mishalim el keren bilvad. The second thief pays only the principal. Gonav umochar ubo achir v'gonvo. Someone stole and then sold it, and then another thief came and stole from the purchaser. Harishon mishalim teshlum arav v'chamisha. The first thief pays 4 or 5. Vasheni mishalim teshlum kefel. the second thief is obligated to paying double. Now the first thief pays 4 or 5 because in addition to stealing, he also sold it. The second thief is described here as simply stealing it, so he pays double. Number 3, gonav v'tovach, a thief stole and slaughtered. Ubo achir v'gonvo, another thief comes and steals what we'll call the meat. Harishon mishan tishlumi arba v'chamisha, the first thief pays 4 or 5, he stole and slaughtered. And v'sheni en mishalim tashlumi kefel keren bilvad, the second thief pays only the principal. There are questions I'm sure everyone would like to ask, but we're going to hold off on all of those for the time being. Katoni miha mitziyasa. It, however, taught in the middle of this source, and here just as a quote again, we put it in a frame. Gonav u'mochar u'bo'achir v'gonvo. An initial thief stole, sold it, and another thief comes and steals from the purchaser. Harishon mishalim tishlumei dalevei, the first thief, for having stolen and sold, pays 4 or 5. Vasheni mishalim tashlumei kefel, the second thief, the one who stole from the purchaser, pays double. Amos. When is this? Under what circumstances? As we indicated before, the diamonds are here to set up the source. Under what circumstances? Is it before Yeush or after Yeush? So when did this take place? If the original owner hasn't given up hope on seeing his item back, why would the second thief have to pay double? You pay double when you steal an item from the owner of the item. The second thief stole from a purchaser. Was the purchaser the legitimate owner of the item? What happened here? We have an owner who's longing to see his object. And what happened to the object? It was stolen, and it started to have its domain transferred, because the first thief was Mishana Rishu, so he changed the domain by selling it to some purchaser. Yeah, but there's no legitimate owner here other than the original victim. Shinui Rishus below Yeush Mi Iko Lamandamar Dakoni. The change of domain, namely from thief to purchaser, without original owner giving up hope, would anyone say that that represents legitimate acquisition? No. So the purchaser is holding on to what we call hot goods. He's holding on to something that's stolen. Why would the Tanaic source say that the second thief has to pay double for something that wasn't legitimately owned by the one from whom he stole? It's obvious then. We have to say that the source is speaking about a situation where the original owner has resigned himself to the loss of the item. He has been misjudged. He's given up hope. Oh, he's given up hope. So now when you focus on the purchaser, we have the two necessary elements for acquisition. We have Yeush on the part of the original owner, and Shinui Rishus, the transfer from the thief through his sale to the purchaser. And now when the second thief comes and steals from the purchaser, he has to pay the purchaser double. He stole from a legitimate owner of the item. If you are to think that Yeush, the resignation of the original owner, is a means of acquisition on the part of the thief himself, after all, the guy stole an item, the owner gave up hope, now the thief is holding on to it. What would Rav have said about that? Rav said, Yeush Kaina. Well, if you're going to accept that, Amai Mishalim Tashlimei Dalit Vehei, why should the first thief pay in section 2 of the source the 4 or 5 payment? Why? What did he do? He has a stolen item that he sold. But Didehu Dizoven, he was selling his own thing. If Rav is correct, and the original owner gave up hope while the item was in the possession of the first thief, it becomes his. What, is there something wrong with selling your own items? There's a problem already. We see a problem. We call it problem. The first problem is the presence of the 4 or 5 payment when that first thief sells the item. Apparently, that thief doesn't acquire it through Yeush, contrary to Rav. Vesu dekotani reisha. And furthermore, it said in the reisha. In the meantime, we're setting up the source as le'achar yeush. That's why we dashed underline this, just the line above, to focus on that. Now, taking that idea that we're le'achar yeush, and we're going to read now section 1 of the source. It said there, gonav ubo acher v'gonvoy. There was a theft, and then someone else came and stole from him. Rishon mishalim tashlumei kefel. First thief pays double. Vasheni ein mishalim ele keren. The second thief pays only the principal. Mifti. Let's look into this. Li'achar yeush kaiminon. We have set it up after yeush. V'i salka daitich yeush kaine. If, as Rav said, that yeush is kaine, sheni amai eino mishalim keren. Why does the second thief pay only the principal? Elo lav. Shma mino yeush lo koni. It must be that yeush does not acquire. Oh, if it doesn't acquire, so I understand why the second thief is not—he's not paying double. He didn't steal something that was legitimately owned by from the one from whom he stole it. So there's no kefel for that. The kashya l'Rav, and all of this represents then a difficulty for Rav. We mentioned the difficulty in the Mitziosa was why, if Yeush is kind of, why does the first thief have to pay 4 or 5 for the sale that he committed? And in the ratio, section 1, why, if Yeush is kind of, does the second thief pay only the principal? So at this point then, you can see we have a problem for Rav, who said that Yeush is kind of, that Yeush does acquire. Omar Rava comes to the defense of Rav. Rava says, you can't ask from this Tanaic source a question on Rav. This Tanaic source is itself not accurate. He's going to point out, by focusing on section 3 of the source, that the source is simply inaccurate. And Rava's approach, therefore, is going to be, we're going to see a diamond coming up, and at that point, if we skip ahead just for a moment, li'olam kulu lifnei yeush. The whole source is talking about circumstances before the original owner gave up hope. Right away, then, that Rav is off the hook. Rav spoke about after yeush. This source is speaking about pre-yeush. So this diamond then will represent a defense of Rav. This will be we can call it the first answer on in defense of Rav. We have added a crown shape on the side of the Gemara. We indicate that this crown shape, we also have a numbering scheme 1 through 3. They represent Hesberim Shel Hamokar D'Liel. These are explanations of the source above, Shemahavim Tshuvoi Savur Rav, which ultimately represent answers, defenses of Rav. In other words, the source above needs explanation. We're going to explain the source, but after all is said and done, the source is no problem for Rav. As we already indicated, when you look at the upcoming diamond, the source is talking about a case before Yeush. That already shows you that the source has nothing to do with the situation that Rav described, namely after Yeush. So now, let us start with Rava. Omar Rava, v'tisbara, and Rava says, explain yourself. You are raising this source as a question on Rav. Ha, metar tzasehi. Is this source Is it literally, is it straight? Is it smooth? Is it reliable? Hello, Dekartani Seifa. When you look at section 3 of the source, which we really haven't looked to up till now, when you look at section 3, what does it say? Gonav v'tovach ubo acher v'gonvoi. Thief stole and slaughtered. And then someone came and stole from him. Harishon mishalem teshlume arba v'chamisha. The first thief has to pay to the original owner 4 or 5 times for having committed the theft plus slaughter. V'sheni einu mishalem el keren. Second fellow pays only principal. Why does the second thief pay only principal? Is there anyone that says a shinui that is a change through proactive physical manual alteration of the stolen item, in one word, slaughtering of that animal? That's a major shinui maisa. It's a change in the stolen item. It was a living animal, now it's meat. Is there anyone that would say that a shinui of that nature, lo kani, does not acquire? Certainly it acquires. And therefore the first thief, after slaughtering the animal, is considered the legally legitimate owner of it. Why then does the second thief not pay double? And yet the source says he pays only keren, only the principal. Ela li'olam kula lifnei yeush. Rather, the entire source is pre-yeush. So, automatically, no kasha, no difficulty from the source on Rav. Rav spoke about a thief who stole and the owner had given up hope. This source is not talking about that. It's pre-yeush. And now for a surgical procedure to the source that opened this section. The epoch seifa lemetziosa umetziosa leseifa v'eimo hochi. That means we're going to switch the middle section with the end section and state it as follows. We had noticed that the source, we're following right now the line of Rava, that the source is speaking about pre-Yeush. But now in order to understand the source and all of its halachas, given the fact that it's pre-Yeush, we have to do this. We have to switch information in the Seifa, the third section, with information in the second section, and read thusly. So what you might want to do is if you want to keep one finger on the Gemara here and another finger on the original source, and then you'll see what part of section 2 is implanted in section 3 and what part of section 3 is implanted into section 2. I think we should point out, by the way, that by having set up the source as pre-Yeush, we understand why section 1 mentions that the first thief pays kefel, he did the act of theft. The second thief pays only keren, he pays only the principal. He wasn't stealing from a legitimate owner of an item. Therefore, there's no double payment made. Now, let's continue in the Gemara. The number 2 that you see here is a reference to section 2 of the original source. It says, and now bear in mind, we're rereading things. Gonav umochar uvo acher v'gonvo. That's what we saw, is the circumstances in section 2. There was a thief who stole, sold, and a second thief came and stole from the purchaser. Harishon mishalim tashlume arba v'chamisha. The first one pays 4 or 5. And now, here, take note. Vasheni, and here we're implanting from, we're transplanting information from the third section of the original source and putting it in over here at this point. Vahasheni Eino Mishalim Ela Karen. The second thief who bought from the purchaser an item over which there had never been any Yeush. So that second thief pays only principal. And the, we have an addition from the Gemara. We put in the brackets, the Shini Rishus Belo Yeush Lo Koni, the transfer of an item from one domain to another, from original thief to the per, to the purchaser, that doesn't enable, that doesn't cause the purchaser to be the legitimate owner of it. That then is the, well, we'll say the new understanding, or we'll call it the proper understanding of section 2, where the Shani in the original source, the Shani, that second thief who he, who stole from the purchaser, he pays only principal. Number 3, Gonav v'tovach ubo acher v'gonvoy. In the original source, section 3 spoke about a person who stole, slaughtered, and some second thief came along and stole the meat. Harishon mishalim teshlumi arba v'chamisha. That's what we saw all along the way. In the first source, that the original source means the first fellow, he pays 4 or 5. Of course, he gonav v'tovach, he stole and slaughtered. Our problem was what it said at the end of the original source, and here we're transplanting information from section 2 and implanting it here in section 3. Vasheni Mishalim Tashlume Kefel. The second thief who stole the meat, he pays double. De Kanya, Bishinu Maisa Kanya, means the first thief acquires it through the Shinui Maisa, the change, the action change, through the slaughtering. So the first thief becomes the legitimate owner of the meat. Hence, second thief who steals from the first thief the meat, he pays kefel. Rav Papa Omar, li'oilom lo tepuch. Rav Papa's approach is no switching around. And the source is speaking after Yeush. And as far as the Seifa, we had a problem. First of all, if you're talking, it's after Yeush, that's one thing to bear in mind. By the way, that information we take from the Rashi, who points out that according to this approach, we're setting up the source after Yeush. I mentioned that Rashi points that out. You can see that in Rashi in Dibur HaMasil Ihochi. It's abbreviated in your Rashi Ayin Aleph Hey. But Rav Papa is in fact saying, don't switch anything around. It's after Yeush. And as far as section 3 is concerned, which was a problem not having nothing to do with the Yeush issue, but Seifa, which indicated that the slaughtering of the stolen animal did not create ownership on the part of the first thief, that's Beis Shammai Hi. The third section of the source is in accordance with the school of of Shammai. The thinking of Beis Shammai, Yomar Shinui b'Mekayma Oimei. Beis Shammai is of the opinion that Shinui, the changes, even physical changes, don't make a difference. In other words, acquisition is not achieved through Shinui. Well, Ihachi, if the source is set up as after Yeush, Kashya, Reisha, Umetziyosa, Larav. Well, we go back to the original problems that we raised from the Reisha and the Metziyosa from section 1 and 2. And what were the problems? In the Reisha, we saw this Ganav Shani, the second thief, was paying only Karen, only the principal to the first thief. But if Shinui is Kaina, why does he pay only principal? Why doesn't he pay to the first thief double? And in the Metziyosa, why regarding the first thief and his sale, why does he pay 4 or 5? If Shinu is kind of, when that thief had stolen and there was subsequent resignation of loss on the part of the owner, according to Rav, first thief would be considered the illegitimate owner of it, and the sale is a sale of his own item, and yet in the Mitziosa we saw the Ganav having to pay 4 or 5 for the sale. So Rav Papa at this point runs into difficulty. Amar Rav Zvid li'olam kula lifnei yeush. Rav Zvid points out, similar to what we saw before in approach in the with the first crown. Here we have in the third crown. Also, he's saying the entire source is pre yeush. With that, then there's no problem on Rav. And as far as the Seifa is concerned, in Rav Zvid's eyes, the Seifa is like Beis Shammai. However, with regard to Rav Zvid, there's not going to be any switching around, no surgical transplantation that we did before in approach number one. The Hacha B'mai Askinan, in the middle section, where it spoke of the second Ganav stealing from the Lokeach, and Kefel was paid. Why would Kefel be paid if it's before Yeush? The Hacha B'mai Askinan, there in the second section, what are we dealing with? It's true we said before Yeush, but it's before Yeush while in the possession of the first thief. However, there was Yeush once it reached the hands of the purchaser. The Havele Yeush. That is Yeush, and according to Rav, Yeush is Kaine. It's true there was Yeush, but not while in the possession of the first Ganav. Therefore, the first Ganav stole and sold, but it wasn't selling his own thing. So therefore the first Ganav pays 4 or 5. We were then asking about the second thief having to pay Kefel, if that's to be understood. We can understand that now, because the second thief stole from the purchaser who did acquire it. The Gemara adds, "V'lo tema mishum debo inon yeush v'shinui rishus." Don't say that we're explaining the Yeush here as part of the need for Yeush and Shinui Rishus, which would not help Rav out at all. Elo afilu b'Yeush l'chudei nami koni gabi ganav. Had there been Yeush alone, the first thief would have acquired it, had there been Yeush at that point. Why then do we introduce the Yeush only after it reached the hands of the purchaser? And I repeat now, not because I need to have both elements of Yeush and Shinui Rishus. That's not true. Elo delo mishkachas de mishalmi travayu ganav rishon veganav sheni elo bahachi. The only reason we set up the source like that is because otherwise you won't find multiple payments on the part of the first thief and the second thief, other than setting it up like this. In order to have both thieves involved with multiple payments, we have to introduce Yeush while in the hands of the Lokeach, in order to make the Lokeach a legitimate owner, through which we then understand why the Ganav Sheni does pay Kefel, as was taught in the middle section. So with that approach, as we saw, we defend Rav from the serious question or questions raised from that original long source that started at the first of the wide lines. What were the approaches that were taken here? We had crown number one, which set up the sources before Yeush, and then we had that surgical approach. We had Rav Papa, who was an attempt, but it didn't work. And then Rav Zvid's approach, which, as you saw, set up the whole source before Yeush, meaning in the hands of the Ganav. As far as the middle section is concerned, there was Yeush, but only in the possession of the Lokeach. Had there been Yeush in the possession of the first owner, first thief, he would have acquired like Rav. And the reason that the Yeush is appearing only in the hands of the Lokeach was, as we explained, only through that we can then find the existence of multiple payments on the part of the two thieves. Only that way, by having made the second, the purchaser, a legitimate owner through Yeush at that point. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.